It works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Good morning to all of our WBAI listeners. Time right now is 11 o'clock. Get ready for your next show. It's going to be Radio Free IRN with your hosts, John McDonough and Malachi McCourt. Coming up next.
Bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory? If you meet the undertaker, or the young man from the crew, have a pint with what's left over. Now I'll say goodbye to you. For the bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Here we go.
You sound in good form, Malachi.
Well, John, you sound in good form, your good self. Can I have the next dance?
You know what? Somehow this weekend, the song doesn't sound as depressing with the good weather and Memorial Day coming in.
What's coming in? A Memorial Day. That's tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is indeed.
Yeah, yeah. There was a phone was beep, 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 beeping there, but I just turned it off. So we're all set to go. So, John, we have 2 hours.
We have 2 hours and we're on every Sunday from 11 to 1, and I'm speaking to Malachi McCourt.
And I'm speaking to John McDonough. And, is that what a coincidence? You're
how do we meet
to
like
me
this?
And I'm speaking to you.
And hopefully there's somebody out there listening during our fundraising drive, and we want to thank everyone that the reason we're still on during the drive is people have been donating while we've been on the show, because a lot of the times when the fundraisers are going on, we get preempted for other shows, like the show before us. They had Gary Knoll was on, and we'd like to welcome his audience now that's listening to us. So if people donate today, and we will be on next Sunday, I already got the schedule. So, you know, Malachi, we seem to be doing all right, and there seem to be people listening.
And they are sending some money.
Yes. And what
which I'm delighted to hear.
Yeah, and it's been one of the better premiums we've ever had, because it ties in with the pandemic. Of for $35, you can get a mask with the WBAI logo, either in black or white, for $35. And there's 3 ways of doing it. It's WBAI.org. It pops up as an ad. Give the numeral 2, WBAI.org. But if you want to call, the number is 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. And if people contribute and the fundraiser is extended, they'll have us on. And we're going to mix in 3 guests, Malachi, today. We'll have Mick Malampy, who's been a regular on now from the Irish Repertory Theater, doing the clips that the show must go online. But then we're having a special guest, because I never know, speaking to you during the way, you say, all right, I'm lining up someone. And it's usually out of left field. And at 12 o'clock, we're having on somebody from Notre Dame, are we?
Notre Dame, yes. I wonder how is that damage was done to Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. I wonder how the renovations are going there, or are they at all? I have no idea. We don't hear anything. All we hear now, of course, is about disease and tragedy and people being sick and dying, and now children are dying. Are getting that, the getting what kids are getting. What is that called? I can't remember what
well,
the kids are getting.
You should really then turn to the White House, because now I used to call him Dr. Donald J. Trump, because he used his body as a medical experiment. Yes. But now he's Father Donald J. Trump with ordering open the churches and mosques and synagogues. And who knew he was that religious, Maliki? I'm always stunned every week by our Father Donald Trump with his pronouncements.
Dr. Donald Trump, Father Trump, Husband Trump.
Yes, he wears.
I was wondering about which. Does he also observe the Muslim Sabbath? You see, we have I get confused about these Sabbaths, you see. There's this God guy, apparently. He went to work. Now, they always usually say he. And he built the world in 6 days. And then on the seventh day, he created a guy named Adam. I don't know why he called the guy Adam, and why the woman's name was Eve. And the thing is that he knocked this guy out, this Adam guy. He gave him an uppercut, and then while he was out, he took a rib that I don't know where he got the surgical knife to cut out a rib and created Eve, you see. And so, he said, I don't know, did he marry them? Did he, a man and wife? I can't get it straight at all.
Well, Father Trump will enlighten us in the weeks to come about that. But you know what, Maliki, I almost forgot. You talked about Notre Dame, but you're having a friend on from Notre Dame.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Bill O'Rourke, William O'Rourke, who is a brilliant, brilliant writer. He has written novels and memoirs and lots of good stuff. So, and his latest one is, it's very simple. It is politics and the American language. So, and this is published by Welcome Rain. And that is a place, John Weber was the guy that founded this little publishing company. And he was the one that got me started. There was a fellow named Charlie DeFanti, and he called me up one day and he said, I think you have a book in you. And I was wondering, what do I do now? I have a literary bowel movement. But anyway, Charlie said, I have a friend, John Weber, who would publish you. So that's how we got started. And that's how I got started, John Weber. Welcome Rain. But then he decided that this was too big. My book was too big for to just go into a small publisher. So he started me off, and off we went. And A Monk Swimming was the name of the book, which hit the bestseller list. New York Times bestseller list. Now, some people, John, say that they say things like, you were nobody until your brother Frank published his book, Angela's Ashes. And I was wondering, how could you be nobody if you're alive? Could you answer me that?
Who are you hanging out with that is saying that to you anyway? I would suggest you got to change your friends.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't be friends, John. Some of these people, they horn in on my Facebook, and they say, you were nobody.
And of course, Mal, you would never provoke things like this.
Oh, good God, no. I mean, they said, your brother, you're hanging on to your brother's coattails. Now, my first appearance on television was, believe it or not, John, was 1958, New Year's Day, New Year's Night, on The Tonight Show with Jack Parr. And it was live then, and that was 11:30 on the 1st of January, 1958. And that was my beginning of... and then I was on about 20 times after that. And then I went on with Merv Griffin, with Mike Douglas, who else? Some other people. Then I was doing soap operas, and I was an absolute nobody for quite a long time, until I became somebody due to my brother. Can you imagine that, John?
Yes. And Malky, you were talking about the New York Times. We're going to finish up with our own Corey Kilgannon, who had the front page story on the Times yesterday, talking about Al Mayer. Now, Al Mayer is now Mr. Law and Order, and I'm going to christen him as Rudy de Blasiano, who is now putting up fences at Rockaway, going to be saving drowning people. Like he said, if you go in the water, we're going to pull you out. We? Is he going to be down there pulling people out? So we're going to have Corey talking about how Long Island, where most of the people from Long Island are from Brooklyn and Queens, now do not want the people from Brooklyn and Queens coming out to their beaches. So we're going to be talking about this bizarre policy of you can go to Jones Beach, but not Rockaway or Orchard Beach. So we'll be talking to Corey about that. And we'll be mixing in fundraising in between all these stories that we've been doing for a number of years here on WBAI. And the number to donate, give, I don't know, Malachi, what are we saying these days to the station?
Subscribe.
Subscribe. To get the mask, this unbelievable, great WBAI mask. Listen, you're going to be buying a mask anyway to go outside and go shopping. You might as well get it from BAI and have the logo and advertise the station at WBAI.org. There's a pop-up ad.
It's printed on it, right?
Yeah, it's right there. It's printed on it. Or you can
and
just
it,
call
it,
the...
It is $35, and it's very simple. And when you donate, you usually don't get anything back if you just donate. Whereas if you subscribe, you get words, you get opinions, you get thoughts, and you get a little bit of wisdom occasionally, and once in a while you get a bit of humor. We laugh at ourselves because we can be as silly as anybody, John. We can be. So, but anyway, if you subscribe, you get something back. You get the wit and the wisdom of McCourt and McDonough, or McDonough and McCourt, and off you go then. And so we're very wise people, John.
Yeah, so we've given out the number. And Malcolm, do you have any rants for this week? I know just by turning on the TV, you can come up with a rant about whoever appears on it. But anything particularly irritating you this week?
You started it off, John, with your reference to that the churches are going to be opened. And people, I don't know, how many decades of the rosary do you have to stay apart if you're Catholic? And then I can't get it straight about the Sabbath. Like you have Muslims and Jews have synagogues and mosques. The Catholics and the Christians have Christianity, and they have them on Sunday. Jews and Muslims have Saturday. Which one is the correct day? And the other thing about it is, how is it this God guy is going around making people? And where was this guy Jesus? He made Adam, and then he made Eve, and then we have. But where was Jesus? When did he come on this scene? Was he just an afterthought? I can't get the whole thing is absolutely, and he, the God guy he takes a rib, and he makes a woman out of a rib. How can you do that?
Well, that's why we turn to Father Trump.
Yes,
he has
right.
I mean, you might find it be hard pressed to get in touch with him today because he's on the golf course, but you know,
worshiping, isn't he?
Well, he's worshiping on the golf course on his little cart as he's spinning around. But Malachi, this is why Trump, if things go in the way, he's going to beat Biden. Trump would rather die. He is willing to kill himself to be president. He doesn't wear a mask. He takes medical experiments. He's opening up everything. He doesn't care if his followers die. Whereas Biden now, there's two Bidens. You have Biden who gives an interview, and then you have to watch about, say, 2 or 3 hours later where Biden has to come back on and explain what he meant by the first interview. So Biden is not coming out of his bunker in Delaware, whereas Trump is flying around the country. He's going to golf courses. He's going to rallies. He'll eventually live in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin in order to win those states. But the Biden camp cannot even let him out. And it's getting so bad now that Bernie Sanders has sent out an email telling all his supporters, and I'm just pulling it up here now, to please refrain from making any negative statements about other candidates, party leaders, campaign staff, supporters, news organizations, or journals. This is unbelievable. He's telling all his supporters, please don't say anything about Biden. We're going to try to keep him hidden in his bunker in Delaware, and let's just hope Trump implodes, which might not happen. I think he implodes every week, but it's certainly 40% of the country thinks this is great what's going on.
I have a feeling that this might be his last hurrah, do you think?
How many times have we heard this story? Oh, this is it. What he said about McCain, that he's no war hero, and that'll finish him. And the tape, grab them, that'll finish him. Malachi, 100,000 dead, and it still hasn't finished him. Come on. I mean, Jesus.
But the thing about him, what I like about him, is that he is, all his lies are truthful. I think.
Well, that's what he thinks anyway.
Oh, yeah, they are. That's the way it is. And he's a good Christian, and I know that according to one of the things he said in the Bible with the 2 Corinthians. Did you know that he talked about the 2 Corinthians?
Yeah, well, he's golfing with them today.
Is he golfing?
Yes. So he knows whereof he speaks. He's out on the links with them today. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, there's a hole in one there in his head, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think he got that. It is absolutely amazing that that he is out there golfing on this is Sabbath, isn't it? You're not supposed to be doing things like that. And he's on his own. So he's driving his own golf cart as well.
Well, he's probably got the Secret Service and everything. Like I said, if he's going to go down, he's taking everyone with him because he's willing to die to be president, where the other guy is like, well, should I go out? I don't want to get the virus. Trump doesn't care about this virus. It's quite obvious. He doesn't wear a mask. He eats like a gavone. I mean, he should be studied.
What's a gavone?
Huh?
What's a gavone?
Idiot, a stupid person. It's Italiano, a gavone.
is that Hebrew?
No, that's neighborhood Spanish? Italian.
Oh, Italian. I see. Very good, John. Pretty good for McDonough. You got the language down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I grew up with all Italians, and I did pick up, I could curse probably better than Italian than some Italians. But, Malachi, you know how the country, you know, is getting on track the virus is starting to recede, despite the false news and the New York Times front page today with the 100,000 or the 1,000 people, is that we've had our first mass shooting in Arizona at a mall that was filmed. So that to me is a sign of spring. The mass shooters are coming out. If the schools are brought back, we'll have the school shootings. And that's a sign
of
America.
Was there one today, John? I didn't know.
A couple of days ago, there was a mass shooting at a mall. So that's a sign of America returning to normalcy. Now what we'll have is the Democrats saying, well, he used an AK-47. And the Republicans say, too soon, don't politicize this. And then Fox will have on LaPierre from the National Rifle Association. And then MSNBC will have on somebody from Sandy Hook condemning the guys on Fox. And that's when you know the country is on the way back, when we have these mass shootings. So that's something we can look forward to when they open up the schools in September. Yeah. Because that's part of the American dream, is mass shootings at schools and malls. So we're on the track. As soon as I saw the mass shooting in Arizona at the mall, I said, we're on the comeback now. We're on the comeback trail.
So what can we do now for us to continue on this Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sundays? How can we persuade people to contribute, donate, subscribe? Contribute, subscribe, donate. That's three anyway. Anything else? Any other euphemism?
Well, I think the way things are going, even the shootings in Brooklyn, we're going to need WBAI bulletproof vest that you can wear with your logo mask as we walk around the streets, because people have been cooped up with their 9mm for way too long here in the city. And it seems they're breaking out with shootings all over Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx. So that might be something that management can start looking up, is WBAI bulletproof vests that you can wear when you go out with your mask, when you go shopping. And hopefully you don't get hit by a stray bullet, which seems to be on the rise with good weather as we attempt to storm the beaches. You know, Malachi, this is what de Blasio, or as I'm calling him, Rudy de Blasiano, a combination of Giuliani, is, you know, we're remembering now of storming the beaches in June at Normandy and Utah Beach and everything. Now we're recreating that by storming the beaches at Rockaway, and we're going to be storming the beaches in Coney Island and at Orchard Beach. This is what de Blasio has got in mind for us, that he'll put up a fence that we'll have to scale. We'll scale the fence, and then we'll eventually, instead of hitting the beach, we'll be hitting the ocean. So this is the craziness and the times that we're living in right now. But
well,
you can donate to this.
There are thousands of people are killed every year since 9/11. I think we had 3,000 people killed on that one day, and since then we've had we get about 15 children are killed every day, every single day of the week, 15 kids. And then you have thousands and thousands. We have, how many people were been killed since? 500,000 people have been shot since 9/11. 500,000 people have died. And only... the terrorists only killed 3,000, whereas our own people killed 500,000. So I think that's a bit more. When are we going to stop that?
Well, we shouldn't, because according to Bill O'Reilly, that's what's known as the price of freedom. And
really?
If you can't put up with the price of freedom, Malachi, you know, you can go to Cuba. You can go to your beloved North Korea. But
yes,
that is the price of freedom. If people have to die by the tens of thousands in order for me to get my 9mm Glock,
yes,
well, that's the sacrifice as an American you will have to make.
So if you want to hear these statistics anyway, I think we should call 516, what is it, John?
Before we get shot, call 516-620-3602, and I'll go a little bit slower so you can write that down. It's 516-620-3602, and you can get a mask, but you can make any donation, particularly to the show for the next 2 hours. And for $35, you get the mask that you'll be wearing when you go out shopping or you head to Rockaway or Coney Island. It has the WBAI logo on it in black or white. And, you know, you help yourself. The station's trying to help our listeners to stay alive by wearing the mask. And you can keep the station alive, which is the main thing for us to get out this information and give you updates on what's going on in the theater. We'll be doing that at 11:30 with Mick Malampy and 12 o'clock with Notre Dame Professor William O'Rourke. We'll be talking about politics. And then we'll finish up with Corey Kilgannon talking about what's going on with the beaches. Will we be storming the beaches of Rockaway, Orchard Beach, and Coney Island? And as unfortunately, I predicted last week because de Blasio, or I mean Rudy de Blasiano, has not paid for lifeguards to be at Rockaway. There was someone, a 24-year-old kid, drowned 2 days ago in Rockaway. So the consequences are there already, and that's going to happen.
Was that because of the temperature of the water? What happened to him?
No, listen, Rockaway is notorious for riptides. If you go out to Rockaway, there's certain times of the year where a riptide just pulls you out into the ocean, and then kids try to swim against it, get tired, and they go under, and where they should go with the riptide and float out with it. But, you know, you need lifeguards there for that. So what happened in de Blasio's great way and his policies, they had to call in a helicopter, Floyd Bennett Field, out between Brooklyn and Queens, and then had to get the Harbor Patrol to come out and try to save the kid. But, of course, it was too late. The kid had drowned. But instead of paying a lifeguard, they probably don't get paid that much. Now we're paying NYPD, we're paying helicopters, we're paying Harbor Patrol to go out after the fact because they're not there. And like what I'm going to talk to Corey about, my sister who's retired NYPD, she told me what they would have to do is go down to the water's edge, take off their gun belt with their taser, take off their bulletproof vest, and then jump in, and then if that stuff is stolen, they get written up for not safeguarding the gun or the taser or their badge.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the position that they're putting cops into. They're making them lifeguards with guns and tasers. This is the thing that de Blasio has created. And we'll be talking to Corey Kilgannon around the 12:30 mark about, you know, what's going on. Where are their lifeguards? What's going on in Long Island? And the difference here in the city. But you know what I think Malachi will do? I'll give out the number one more time. We'll play some summer music.
Before you do, John.
Yes, go ahead.
Could I ask you a question?
I'm waiting.
Okay.
I'm always leery when you say that.
You
God,
say
where is he going with
516, correct?
Yes.
620. And then you say
3602.
So, but you usually you say you don't say zero there.
It's instead of what? O two?
That's what you say. Yes.
Yeah, well, I'm doing that in memory of Monroe, an old listener,
yes,
who would
right.
call in and chastise me for that.
516-620-3602, you say.
Yeah. I'm mixing it up.
You are, yeah, right. people have been complaining, you know that.
Oh, I... You know what, Malachi? I think they're complaining a lot more about other things we're doing than giving out the number.
Shall we give them the number again, John?
Yeah, it's 516-620-3602. Get a mask.
Not 02?
0-360-202, whatever you want to do,
yeah,
whatever you find it.
I just want to have a go at your nether regions, John.
You're breaking my balls. What are you doing here, yes. Come on, man. Breaking my chops. Well, right, so now anyway, we're going to go play. We're going to dedicate all of this music to Rudy de Blasiano and his great policy of what he's doing at Rockaway. But this is Summer in the City. We come back. We'll speak to Mick Malampy and Malachi. Some news about the Irish and how they got that way.
Yes. The brother.
We'll talk Francis. About that on the other side with Mick.
Yes. Right. Okay. Okay.
Shadow in the city, all around people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match, yeah. But at night it's a different world, go out and find a girl, come on and dance all night, despite the heat it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night, just like the heat it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
Summer in the City, as the residents of New York City will be storming the beaches like Normandy in Utah, but they'll be called Coney Island and Orchard Beach and Rockaway this weekend and starting on this weekend. But now we're going to a segment which we've been doing for a couple of months now with Mick Malampy, and it's taken me 2 months to officially pronounce his name right. He started with the Irish Repertory Theater, something before everyone started putting things online and before people were Zooming. Mick came up with the idea that the show must go online, and he went to the vast family of the Irish Repertory Theater and wanted them to do a little part from plays and poetry and singing. And for the past couple of months, we've been doing that, Mick. And before we get to you and Malachi talking about the Irish and how you guys got that way, maybe you could just now introduce these pieces and set them up, and we'll let the two of you mix it up afterwards.
Well, of course, John. Great to hear you guys again. It's become a really lovely part of my Sunday morning, I can tell you that much, chatting to you, lad. So thank you very much. This week from The Show Must Go Online, hashtag Irish Rep Online, we have four pieces. The first one is a really great friend of mine, Paul Nugent, who I worked with in 2006 at the Field. And if you see this video, you'll see Paul hasn't aged a day. But here he is delivering a little bit of Oscar Wilde to us all.
He obtained admission to my house by means of the false pretense of being my brother. Under an assumed name, he drank, I've just been informed by my butler, an entire pint bottle of my Perrier Jouet 89 wine I was specially reserving for myself. Continuing his disgraceful deception, he succeeded in the course of the afternoon in alienating my only ward. He subsequently stayed to tea and devoured every single muffin. And what makes his conduct all the more heartless is that he was perfectly well aware from the first that I have no brother, that I never had a brother, and that I don't intend to have a brother. Not even of any kind. I distinctly told him so myself yesterday afternoon.
Next we have someone who's very well known to the Irish-American writers and artists, Mr. John Kearns. He's a fantastic playwright. And here we have John. He's sharing his poem aboard the Aran Seabird leaving Inishmore.
Nice. I am John Kearns. This is my poem aboard the Aran Seabird leaving Inishmore. Soon there will be rainbows at my feet. Seagulls circle and cavort. Gaily they laugh above the Atlantic surface. Below, a lone black salmon finds no food and shadows aimlessly the same small space. I stand aboard the Aran Seabird. Soon there will be rainbows at my feet. I leave you on your gray and windswept, sea-racked rock where all is always simple. I watch your weathered red face, coarse as the canvas on your curragh, grow desperate, while each disembarked stranger fails to respond. You need transport? You need pony and trap? You need pony and trap? The engine shakes the seabird, my transport. With ceremony, I light a cigarette and sigh a wish. Gohramagit, good luck. May you never sink from your jovial surface to the depths of your despair.
Hello, Mick.
Next, here we have John Perkis, wonderful performer, who's a regular person there at the Irish Rep. He's performing a piece from playwright Tim Ruddy's Knock on the Roof.
Mary was the eldest. She was 14 at the time. Feisty, stubborn, driven crazy by her ferocious young mind. I feared for her, especially. I knew she wouldn't comply, of course. I knew the day it happened. I was overcome with an extraordinary wretchedness, as if your innards suddenly churn into a cold, toxic void of nothing, and then slowly bleeds out of you. Maya led a rebellion of sorts. The conditions and brutalizing she witnessed were just too much. They jumped one of the guards, managed to hold him captive, demanding food and water and help for the sick little ones. A rebellion of children. Can you imagine? She and the others were summarily executed. Drink up. There's a good chat. We haven't got long.
And finally, this week on The Show Must Go Online, we have Miss Mabel Byrne. She's a supremely accomplished young actor, and she's accompanied by her darling da, Ciarán, with a song from A Touch of the Poet, which Ciarán was due to appear in until it was unfortunately postponed at the Rep because of COVID-19. Not only is Mabel a tremendous actor and singer, she's also an accomplished pianist and an entrepreneur also.
This is from A Touch of the Poet. Well, good morning, sir, and how do you do? It's a little red fox's greeting. I've a friend fat goose that I stole from you that I will soon be eating. Well, you can mount your fine white horse and call your hounds together. But I'll be away on the mountainside and you'll not catch me yet.
You!
I think that was her dad there, Ciarán Byrne, giving her a good old boola bus at the end. They've done a remarkable job, the Irish Rep, these past couple of months throughout all of this madness to build up their online programming. Obviously, we can see with the proliferation of Zoom and FaceTime how important it is for a lot of our art institutes to reach their audiences, and it's become a tool for them to do so. They did a production online of Molly Sweeney a couple of weeks ago, which was just fantastic.
And the reviews, that was reviewed with the
Wall Street Journal. Yes.
Yes.
Wall Street Journal, they said it was just simply magnificent. And I have to agree, it was really...
Yeah, it was. It still is.
A great signpost to show us the way to go, you know.
Yes.
They also have this other wonderful program online as well, IRT Meet the Makers, where you get to see and hear the thoughts of lots of the people who are behind the scenes of many of these great shows. And it's a great opportunity just to kind of show a lot of the Irish reps and theatre audiences in general just what goes into all of these wonderful productions. They are, they're moving forward. They just announced their summer season, and there's some really exciting stuff going on. Of course, you know, they're putting out a few shows that are very well loved, such as The Weir is coming in July, and Yes, which was a huge success last year with Aideen Maloney, who's been nominated for some awards recently for her performance in that. It's the story of Molly Bloom. So there are a couple of offerings that you can certainly check out, as well as Love, Noel, which was wonderfully received. I'm really interested to see a play that they're putting on as part of their summer online season called The Gift You Gave to the Dark, which is by Darren Murphy. And it's actually written especially for this COVID-19 era. It's written in mind of the technology we use. And it's basically a play which uses Zoom to express the loss that a young man feels from losing a family member back in Belfast. So that's going to be more innovation coming from the Irish rep. And they're also planning their online celebration, because we can't have a gala where we can all get together and enjoy ourselves. So they're going to be moving it online. And it's entitled The Irish Rep and How They Got That Way. And they'll be featuring a performance of the wonderful 1998 production by your brother, Malachy Frank.
Yes.
And it's going to be part of their online gala and fundraising. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, that started at a beginning almost extemporaneous thing one night at the Irish American teachers gathering one night, and Frank just started talking, and off it went. And then Charlotte and Kieran decided, well, we will do that too, put it on there, and they contributed all the music and all the songs, and Frank contributed all the words, and off they went. And it just amazing. Got all kinds of awards.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I love, I wasn't in New York in 1998, but the one thing that always strikes me, as you go down the stairs to the dressing rooms underneath the theater in the basement of the Irish Rep, it is the first poster at the top of the stairs. So anytime I walk down there or walk up the stairs, I always think of your brother because of that poster. And it's I always find it very inspiring, the Irish and how they got that way. When you're a working actor in New York and getting paid to do what you love, you know, you have these little signposts. I always think it's one of these little signposts that points the way, you know.
Yes.
So I think about it a lot. So looking forward to all that. Will you be involved yourself in some way with the gala, Malachy, this year?
Yes, I got a Charlotte Moore rang me the other day and said that they would present me with something to do. And so whatever it is, I haven't seen it yet, but I will be putting my tongue anyway in the right place.
Or your couple that. Of cents in
yeah,
there.
So I don't know. I don't know what it is I'll be doing, but I will be doing something.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And Ellen, fantastic. Frank's wife, is also going to be speaking as well.
Brilliant. I read that. I read that during the week. It's very important. You know, with the theatres like the Irish Rep, we do want to make sure that they come back as strong as possible once all this is done. So this online programming is keeping the theater very much at the forefront of people's minds. But there is also a fundraising element that's going on as well with their gala. And the one thing I'd also point out, and I've spoke about this in the past, but our theatres are a huge, huge contributor to the economy of the city. So with all this talk of, you know, eventually restarting the economy, you know, our theatres, they contribute not just directly, but also indirectly to all the restaurants and the bars and the other businesses that, you know, surround them, whether it's Broadway or off-Broadway. So, you know, we know times are tough for people right now financially, but any way people can help, whether it's donating to WBAI or, you know, going online and seeing what the Irish Rep are offering, it's a way that we can actually stay home and actually, you know, help from the comforts of our own home.
Well, the recent showing of Molly Sweeney is amazing. There were three monologues, essentially three actors, and contributing their talents and Brian Friel's words, and off they went. And it was an astonishing, brilliant performance with the three folks there doing that whole evening. And I couldn't get over how brilliant it was to be able to do that play and three and the way they did it with three actors doing the monologues, just absolutely brilliant.
Before I saw it, I had been very kind of nervous about a lot of what's going on with Zoom and stuff, because it's not the same as sitting in a theater. But I do think they got it as close to the bone. You know, they honored the play so much, and I thought what Charlotte did, you know, with drawing those performances, you know, they hit it out of the park, as they like to say over here in America.
Well, I had the great pleasure of understudying Jason Robards when they did it at the Roundabout about 12, 14 years ago, I think it was. Yeah. So I was able to remember some of the words, and now I don't. But it was great.
The words are always in there. It's trying to get them back, I find, is the challenge sometimes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
They're in there somewhere, you know.
Yeah. Although, you know what, Mick? I wanted to touch on another aspect. I was talking to you earlier in the day, and we were talking about Molly Sweeney, that Brian Friel had to waive his rights and that the unions got involved. But I never realized there's the other aspect of the agents, that now when this goes online, how does all of this get divvied up? Like, this is all new territory. Like, who can lay claim to a video that was made of the Irish and how they were that way from, say, 10 years ago? Does an agent that worked with Frank get a cut? Or does everybody have to waive their thing? I mean, there's a lot of things that are coming up based on now everything going online instead of being performed live.
It's difficult.
Royalties and residuals and so forth, they all have to be paid one way or another. But some people can waive their rights if they feel like it. So it's okay.
Yeah, I found in the past when you're dealing with writers directly, one-on-one, if you've got a really good relationship with a writer, you know.
Yeah.
And especially when they're, for me personally, when they're back in Ireland, the thought that they might have something that will go on in New York, obviously it's going to promote, you know, their work. And
over here,
a lot of the time in this business, you know, you're playing the long game a lot of the time. You know, you have to kind of think about. And I think that's something that's affecting a lot of people right now, because with all the theater closing, all the closures that are going on, we don't know what's happening in the future. So and in relation to things like agents and how they get paid, again, these are all situations that we never, ever in a million years thought that we'd be in. And like our agents, I mean, they work just as hard as anyone else. And they're working, and these are the people who you don't see. These are the people in the background who are, you know, this is their living and their livelihood. And now all work has stopped. There's no filming going on. There's no theatre. So, you know, it's not just the actors that you see and the writers. It's all these people who are involved in this industry. Their livelihoods are just completely drying up at the moment. So, you know, the more we can encourage people to support our theatres, like the more people who are involved in the industry may be able to come through this terrible crisis with some sort of a career to look forward to, you know?
Does Jesus get residuals for the book, the Bible?
I think there's that's public domain at this stage, I think.
Is it? Malachi, that book came out.
I think that's in the public domain.
No, but book came out before he was born, so I don't know. He's only a couple of chapters in the book, so I.
Oh,
I
that's
don't know
right. He was a newcomer. They call it the new testicle, yeah. A new testament.
Exactly. I think it depends what version of it you're reading as well. I'm not sure if the King John version is still part of the public domain or not. But I mean, who knows? I'm just a nobody. So. I don't know too much about these things, guys.
like I am. I'm a nobody.
Like us all.
I was told that. You were nobody till your brother.
Malcolm, can you explain to me? Like, and I know, Mick, you could chime in on this. You could get 100 great reviews, and I've seen Malachi get. You get one guy saying one bad thing, and that's all you obsess on. You forget about the New York Times. You forget about the New Yorker. This bastard said, I'm a nobody. What? Who the F is he? And what about the other 100 great things that were said about you, man?
Well,
that means nothing.
If you don't mind, I will just chime in quickly on this one. There is, I was involved in a play at the Rep a long time ago, which I absolutely loved and adored. And we got great notices from the Times, from Time Out New York, the Wall Street Journal, everyone. And there was something happened to one production one day where we were thrown a little bit off kilter. But that's not an excuse anyway. But the person, and I will not certainly not mention names, but the person who came to review it didn't have an awful lot of nice things to say about it. This person didn't relish the idea of these men on stage talking about what they were talking about, and this person just had certain things to say about it which weren't nice. I still remember this person's name to this day. I still obsess about it. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's like the bartender who has 99 great customers who tip him well, and all he talks about is the one guy who stiffed him. You know? That's just human nature.
Have you been that way with a bad review?
I found one time my first review was in the New York Times in 1956, and it was in the Tinker's Wedding was the name of the play by John Millington Synge, and so I had to look up the word the reviewer, Brooks Atkinson was the reviewer, and it was a very good review. And but it being my first, I was absolutely delighted. So anyway, the review said that Malachi McCourt was brilliant as the pusillanimous lover. Now I said, what in the name of Jesus is pusillanimous, you see? So anyway, that was actually a diffident, you know, shy kind of awkward kind of an individual. But I was delighted that I had to look up pusillanimous. And so I learned a word out of the review.
The kiss of death, I always find, I tend not to read reviews at all while I'm in the middle of a production.
I devour them.
I stay away until it's all over because it's not because of the bad ones. The bad ones don't bother me because usually when you get a bad one, you just think, they don't know anything anyway.
Yeah.
They're sitting in the dark scribbling into their books. But my trouble is when you get a good one and somebody says he was magnificent. He was magnificent in this role. My tendency is to start thinking, well, why was I magnificent? And how can I be magnificent every night? You know, and that tends to put me more off track.
Just imitate yourself.
Not saying that I've been called magnificent that often, but you know, if you can get what I'm getting at.
You could become pusillanimous.
You could be. Well, I'll have to watch out for that. At least now I know. I've referenced to it now in future in case I ever am called.
There you are. You will now come across it next week.
Malachy, exactly. I've just looked up a Brendan Behan quote on critics, and he says, critics are like eunuchs in a harem.
A harem, right.
They know how it's done. They've seen it done every day. But they're unable to do it themselves.
That's right. That was it.
That was
one of Brendan's great, great quotes there.
It's a lonely road for the poor old critics, yeah.
Yes. And you, Mick, you said that you said about there were, here they say reviews. In Ireland, there are notices.
Your notices, that's right, yeah.
Yeah,
that's an old
there's
one.
A slight difference.
In the United Kingdom, they get the notices. I'm not sure if that's because they used to post them, or they probably post the notices up outside the theatre, you know, if they got a good review.
Yeah.
They probably post it on a notice board. So that's probably where it came from, you know?
Right.
Probably where it came from. There you go, very interesting.
Well, Malachy, we have to get back in the trenches for BAI now, coming up on noon.
They said that Ireland, you know, the United Kingdom and America, two countries divided by a common language.
Yeah, right.
That was I liked that. But the way we malign it, the things we do with it. And how people say things, for example, when I came here and they would say things like, watch your back. I've watch never seen back. The bloody thing, you know, that's.
Exactly, yeah.
So how can I watch something that I can't get my head around?
Yeah. Or, well, there's the famous Irish mother quote is if you fall out of that tree and break both of your legs, don't come running to me.
To me, yes. That's right.
You know? Yeah. Or follow me, sir. I'm right behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think
we, as a race of people, the Irish, I think we do have a wonderful way of speaking English. It's something that I think our writers have definitely improved upon throughout the centuries. You know, we do have a great way of expressing ourselves, whether that's in song or on stage or just having a chat at the bar.
Well, there's certainly the way expressions anyway are quite poetic, I think, rather than prose. How about that? If we say that the Irish are poetic, but then if you're speaking prose, is it prosaic?
I'm not sure. The first time I ever experienced that my English was different to anyone else's English, that Irish English was different, was when I first arrived in New York in 2000, the Republic of Ireland played South Africa in a soccer match in Giant Stadium in New Jersey. This was back in 2000. And Ireland actually won 2-1. And the South African goal was scored by a guy called Denny McCarthy, believe it or not. But coming out of the stadium, a New Jersey state trooper asked me if I'd enjoyed myself. And I turned to him and told him, I said, the crack. I said, I've never had more crack than being in New Jersey. I said, the crack was great in New Jersey. Yeah. And his demeanor completely changed. And I didn't understand why. So I learned quite quickly that there are certain phrases that are very different depending on where you are geographically around the world.
The crack was massive.
The crack was massive in New Jersey.
Yes. Malachy, I know you two could talk for hours. We're sitting at the bar here, and the two of you spinning yarns. We'll never get out of here, but we're closing in on noon. We want to head out to Notre Dame and do a little pitching. But
thank you so much, guys.
No, thanks for coming on and attending Malachy McCourt's bar here on Ryan's Daughter.
My pleasure.
Himself.
And thank you so much again
for
spending the night.
Himself, the bells of hell, go ting-a-ling-a-ling. I forget what else there was. Port of Call. There was another one that That's I right. had.
Well, Jesus. Malachi, one thing, I'm getting text messages from everyone, and to announce that the Irish-American writers and artists were online before the Irish Rep with the St. Patrick's Day special that was done online. And also Mick was in a play just on Zoom with the Irish-American in the salon. So we cannot forget the organization you founded, Irish-American writers and artists, are doing salons through Zoom. And they're doing something called the Coffee Talk on Fridays. So I would recommend go to Irish American Writers and Artists. Just type that in. The site will come up, and you'll be able to keep up on a lot of the events that they're doing online with many of the same artists that are with the Irish Repertory Theater. There's a cross-pollination that's going on.
Yes.
Well, Malachi,
where are we
almost
now?
Almost noon here, and we're listening to WBAI 99.5 New York, and you're listening to Radio Free Aaron. We start at 11 o'clock. We're going to go to 1. We're fundraising here. We wanted to play a song and then go to Notre Dame. But first, if anyone can make a donation, if you'd like to hear the inside, behind-the-scenes look at what's going on now in the theater industry with Malachi McCord and Mick Malampy. You just heard that for the past 20, 25 minutes. We're doing that every week. It's giving you an idea what's going on. But if you want to go out today and you need to wear a mask for $35, I got something for you for $35. If you call 516-620-3602, and you can order a mask with the WBAI logo, or you can just go to WBAI.org, make any type of donation, and you get the mask, and it saves you going out. You can still listen to WBAI. And if you could just do that, we're going to play probably one of the most famous, and I always equate it with New York and Coney Island, with the Drifters singing Under the Boardwalk. And we come out of there, going to be speaking with Malachi's friend, William O'Rourke, or Bill O'Rourke. So let's see if the people in the city can get under the boardwalk and into the water this weekend.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot, you wish your tired feet were fireproof. Under the boardwalk, down by the sea, yeah. On a blanket with my baby's where I'll be. Under the boardwalk. Under the boardwalk,
people walking above.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be falling in love.
Under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
From the park you hear the happy sounds of a carousel. You can almost taste the hot dogs and french fries they sell.
Under the boardwalk.
under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
Oh, yes, and welcome back to WBAI. We're dedicating a lot of these songs today to Mayor Rudy de Blasio, who has now become Mr. Law and Order. Now, you know, you live in New York, you think, I've seen it all. You've went through Giuliani and everything that he did and his Law and Order crackdown. And then when you actually get to hear Rudy de Blasio, and you hear him, he goes, we, if you go in the water, we will go in and get you out. We? You're going to take off your seersucker suit and run into the water and pull people out? I mean, and then he's talking about building fences and condemning then Trump for building walls. I mean, the world has gone upside down. And when they have these press conferences, they should have the medical guy, you have the politician, but then you should have a psychologist. Now, the psychologist should get up and say, listen, we would love all these things to work. We would love that people would social distance. We would love that they wear a mask. And then you get the psychologist come on and say, but that's not going to happen. If you get a 90-degree day, people are going to go into the water. So let's make it as safe as possible, even though we don't want them doing it, that we have to come up with getting lifeguards there. And from what I've been reading in the papers, I'm going to talk to Corey Kilgannon later on, is that they haven't been recertified that they could have even worked this Memorial Day. But yet you have the lifeguards are on duty out at Jones Beach. They're on duty on the South Jersey Shore. And it just shows we are not prepared. So he could say, oh, you can't go swimming. Well, one of the reasons you can't go swimming is because the lifeguards have not been registered or qualified again to be lifeguards. So now we're using the NYPD as if they don't have enough on their plate. They're now going to have to be lifeguards out at Orchard Beach, Rockaway, and Coney Island. This is madness, sheer madness, what's going on here in the city. And we're going to be talking about that with Corey Kilgannon at around the 12:30 mark, because he had a front page story in the Times yesterday talking about how the Nassau and the Suffolk County politicians are saying, you know, why don't you open up your beaches? Don't be flooding our beaches with people coming out from the city. You know, even people in the Hamptons, the people that live out there all year, are complaining about the wealthy elite of Manhattan flocking out on the Hampton Jitney, which I used to see all the time on Third Avenue, heading out to the Hamptons, going into their grocery stores. Yes. Yeah. Skype is saying there's an invalid number. Oh, hello, Maliki. The Maliki, the number we have is just not quite. It's not quite working. All right, so hopefully that Giovanni's now working with Maliki to get the number, because we're supposed to be speaking with William O'Rourke, a professor at Notre Dame University. And we just don't quite have the numbers together, but we're going to get that together. You're listening to WBAI. Now, I've been on WBAI with some form of Irish programming since 1981. And it had to do with the 1981 hunger strikes. I was living in Ireland at the time on my uncle's farm in Donegal, and I went to two of the funerals and wakes of Joe McDonnell and Martin Harrison. And when I came back to New York, I was at a demonstration at the UN, or Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, and Robert Knight, who was doing the news for WBAI, came up to me. And, you know, people said, this guy just came back, and I explained to him what was going on there. And got me on the news, and then eventually it turned into, do you want to come on and cover what's going on in Ireland? So from that time on, I've been doing it with various different hosts. And then we had a Wednesday show, and I asked Maliki, would you want to do the Wednesday show? Not thinking he would, because Maliki always works solo. And if you listen to Maliki, you understand why he works solo. He doesn't need a sidekick. Maliki can cover 2 hours like nobody can. And to me, I'm telling you, that is not an easy thing to do, to be entertaining on the radio for 2 hours. But Maliki could do that in his sleep. So this is the fundraising, or as I call it, the spring offensive here at WBAI. And they've come up with an ingenious way of trying to make money. The way they've done it now, they've taken this pandemic and say, listen, people are going and they're buying masks online, or they're buying them in stores. Why don't we have one with the logo? So that's what we've been doing. David Rothenberg has been doing hundreds of them on his show every Saturday, and he's doing it also now. He does a show on Monday between 11 and 12. So for $35, you can get the mask, you help the station, and you help yourself, and also you're advertising WBAI in whatever neighborhood you're living, and you could do that by calling 516-620-3602. And just ask, you want the WBAI mask. One of the easier ways to do it online is just go to WBAI.org. And literally, as soon as you click onto that, a pop-up ad happens. You know the pop-up ads you hate? When you go to other websites, you're going to love it here because you don't have to search through anything because it just pops up right in your face. You click on that, go through all the maneuvers, then it gets done directly. And then it'll be mailed out to you, and you'll be helping BAI in a lot of fundamental ways, not only supporting the station financially, but you'll also be doing it advertising with the mask. So if you, I can hear myself in the background, like Maliki. I can't
you
wait
should
to
be on the phone.
Say next.
You're getting John?
No, I'm here. I hear.
Off. Hello?
Yeah, Maliki, you're there.
Yes, I am. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Have we got the number?
Have we got the number?
It's saying that the number is invalid. I've been trying to use the Skype, but it's not working.
574-289-5655.
574. See, I got 547. Okay, let's try that again.
574.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay.
289-5655.
All right, that's going out over the air.
Yep.
All right. But Maliki, maybe now, because that'll be the number, maybe you can start the introduction and how you became friends with Bill.
Well, Bill, William O'Rourke is a, has been a professor, doctor, and at Notre Dame. He is he's a man that has a love affair with the English language. He loves the language, but it's mutual. The language loves him. And as Valerie Sayers, author of The Powers Due East, says, it's hard to think of anything William O'Rourke doesn't know or hasn't read. But it's even harder to think of a writer who's ever matched the originality of his insights into literature, politics, and pop culture. His pointed reflections on the anti-war movement of the 60s and 70s, and especially of the Catholic left, are standouts here. O'Rourke's irreverent, and he doesn't worry about causing offense, yet he grants each and every subject the full respect of his red alert attention, his prickled, sharp language, and his surprising empathy. And that's William O'Rourke. And the latest book is Politics and the American Language, Reviews, Rants, and Commentary. 211-201-2018. So there. Are we there, Bill?
Yes, we are. Hello. Nice to speak with you.
Well, great. Well, finally, there was a little mix-up with the number, so we got you now.
That's this and, world. There's always
and now. Mix. And now you're going to be, I inadvertently gave your number over the air, and I think you're going to be inundated now, Bill.
Yeah, well, I've only had that
they'll be calling him up for years.
So, in fact, it's listed in the phone book, so if anybody ever wants
to. Oh, you are. Fantastic. And John McDonough is my co-host here, Bill, John McDonough. So. John, meet Bill O'Rourke.
Thank you, Bill, for coming on.
Nice to meet you, John.
yep,
in this virtual way that we're doing everything these days.
Yeah, it is. We now, are you? You have numerous degrees, and you have several doctorates and masters, and I don't know if you have any mistresses.
Yeah.
But anyway, we won't get into that. There we are. What is there? Your command of the language is immense. You are able to. My God, it's so beautiful. It's I was asking there earlier on in the. Trying to get an answer to if you speak as poetically, of course it's poetic, but is prose prosaic? Would I be right? Would I be wrong that way?
Well, obviously prose can be prosaic, but I do everything I can not to fall into that trap.
Yeah. I was. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking that, Bill. So, you have written. God, it seems like you just do nothing but write. What about the thing, the Catholic left? What exactly is the Catholic left?
Well, obviously now it's dwindled down to a precious few. The Catholic left back in the late 60s and early 70s was a small group of people who were being affected by mainly religious, you know, clerics and nuns who were being affected by everything everybody else was, that whole generation was being affected by in the late 60s. And they had a moral background and a moral compass and a moral foundation. So that was the Catholic side of the left. And that, you know, produced a lot of quandaries for them, because if you see the other part of, you know, revolutionary groups in the 60s and 70s, the moral side was, you know, largely deficient. But the Catholic left tried to adhere to it. They were replacing, in some ways, the Dorothy Day side.
Oh, yes, yes.
Catholic left. They were more, it wasn't that Dorothy Day wasn't an activist, but she was an activist more on a micro level, and they wanted to bring it out into a macro level and change the world. Dorothy Day wanted to, you know, change the world one person at a time. And the Berrigan brothers, who became the most notorious figures and representatives of that period, you know, they had grander ambitions.
Did you know the Berrigan? I knew Dan pretty well.
Yeah, well, I knew Philip insofar as I sat in the same room with him for 3 months. But the only problem with that is he was under lock and key.
Yes.
and I was able to move about. I met him once after he was freed from jail at a lecture he gave. But he was never happy with my book on the Harrisburg case.
Well, he wasn't. Was Paul Mayer involved in that, Bill?
Well,
was he one of the seven?
Dan was Dan Berrigan was an unindicted co-conspirator.
Yes,
in that trial, and I had more contact with Dan after he got he actually came to the trial as a visitor, but I had contact with him two or three times that we ran into each other at a variety of events, and once. Just socially, when I was teaching in Mount Holyoke, I just stumbled into a cafe and he was sitting there. So we picked.
Oh, yes. So you, the novels, Meekness of Isaac.
Yeah.
Idle Hands,
Isaac, yes.
Criminal Tendencies. And what is Knots? That's one single
Knots.
Single word. What
well,
is that?
Knots, I'm happy with the novel Knots. That's just shorthand for Nottingham. It's set in England during the NUM strike, the last great strike the British had in 84, 85.
Yes.
And so everybody just referred to that area as Knots. Of course, I was using it metaphorically, meaning conundrums and entanglements and that sort of thing. But it's N-O-T-T-S is what they would call that area. Yeah.
Yes. And you were a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Five years. That was brought about because of the book I wrote on the 96 presidential campaign, which was Bill Clinton and Bob Dole, Bill Clinton's second term. And that wasn't read by many people, but it got a lot of reviews. And the editorial page editor at the Sun-Times, a guy named Steve Huntley, all of that is gone since the Sun-Times has, you know, been traded two or three times since those days, you know, said, you know, if you can keep writing these every week, we'll be happy to have them.
Oh, very nice.
And they actually paid me, which was a great surprise, you know, at the time.
Good God. So now, Notre Dame.
Yes.
Have you retired from teaching?
Yes, I have that lofty title of Professor Emeritus, which, you know, makes me the emeritus part is I've always felt a little emeritus, you know, all my time at Notre Dame. But nonetheless, yes, I'm now retired, happily.
And South Bend, I seem to remember, I'm not sure if I do remember, but was South Bend a very notorious kind of headquarters of the Ku Klux Klan at one time?
Well, all of Indiana, but the Klan didn't originate in South Bend. It originated more in the small towns south of South Bend. But yes, Indiana is famous for being one of the, you know, the lively incubators of the Ku Klux Klan. And there's one Notre Dame, which of course was, you know, around at the time. There was a famous battle that came, you know, in South Bend with members of the Klan. Because the Klan, even though, you know, obviously, historically, it's more known as the anti-black organization it was, but they were also anti-Catholic. And, of course, you know, Notre Dame was all boys, all men at that time.
Yes,
and
all
so they
Catholics.
So they picked the fight with the wrong crowd, you know, because the football team, 100 strong, kind of descended on them and made short work. So they left South Bend more or less alone.
When they
had always been Democratic, whereas most of Indiana, of course, is Republican and remains Republican.
Yes. Was it really?
Yes.
And so when I know that there was some sort of a convention, a Klan convention or something there, but I read somewhere, you know how these little bits of things stick in your head. But I was remembering that the students at Notre Dame they stationed themselves at various places around town, and they were misdirected, the Klan people, to going to wherever their meetings were, and they sent them the wrong places. They ruined their convention or something. Is that true?
Yes, yes, it is. There's actually a book that was published by the University of Notre Dame Press about the Klan and its history with Notre Dame. I can't remember the title, but it was obviously something the Klan and Notre Dame or a title of that sort. And, you know, that has all these facts in it. But the Indiana, you know, the bulk of it is still very conservative. South Bend, because it had, you know, Studebaker was still flourishing back then. And there were other ancillary businesses to the automobile companies. And there was also Bendix and a lot of big companies that were unionized. So the union, you know, brought a certain kind of democratic mindset to this area.
Whereas my guest is William O'Rourke, Reviews, Rants, and Commentary, 2011-2018, published by John Weber.
Welcome, Rain Press, yes.
Welcome, Rain.
Oh, hasn't been that welcome the last week or so since we've been deluged out here in the Midwest with torrential showers and winds. But,
oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. So,
Rain. It's run out of New York City. So.
We have a little couple of showers here today. Do you write every day?
Yes, I write every day, but I don't write as much as I wish. Meaning, if I ever have a thought, I put it down on a tablet that is always next to me. Writing to me, though, still is, you know, writing narrative of one sort or another. And I've resumed this pandemic and the sort of mind-boggling quarantine that has descended on the country has let me read more than I've been writing, though I finally, 10 days ago, started. I have a couple of projects I have to finish, and I finally got myself back into finally writing narrative. One is an introduction to a book of photographs that will be published in 6 months or so. Not my photographs, Robert Carica's photographs. He just died previous to the pandemic. He died about now 3 months ago.
Oh, my God. And what, speaking of, what is now nonfiction I see here on having a heart attack? 2006.
Yes, I wrote that book 10 years after I had a heart attack. I had a heart attack when I was just turning 40, 41, in my early 40s. And luckily it didn't kill me. I had that heart attack, speaking of heart attacks, in the Notre Dame football stadium. So they were equipped with ambulances at the ready. So I was whisked off to a local hospital, and I managed to survive. So it took me 10 years to write about that because it's an unpleasant subject to revisit, but I did.
Oh, well, you might as well, you know, the fact that you lived is very encouraging for people. The other person I was interested in as well was Edward Dahlberg.
Oh, yeah.
He and the brother. Did you know Frank, my brother?
I only met him once, but we really didn't speak because I think it was at the height of his notoriety, and so he had all sorts of people pressing him.
I got you.
I didn't intervene.
Yeah.
But I did say hi.
we had that sort of encounter at Notre Dame once. You very kindly came.
I was
often wondering about is that little monstrous creature that is the representative of the heroes of Irish heroes, mythical and otherwise. And they have this little creature that runs around with a beard and all that sort of green. And I find that
bloody stupid, to be quite honest.
Yes.
Why would they have something like that?
Well, I think the real reason is money, because there's Notre Dame is, you know, part of it is a marketeering enterprise, and
yes,
they need to identify their sports with something, and so they picked on the leprechaun a long time ago. What they've done to in some sort of penance for this, the last few years, they've made two young women students the leprechaun, which has taken some of the you know, the cliche out of it a bit. So in that way, to have a young woman dressed up in a green outfit,
yeah,
somehow takes a bit of the sting out of it, but not entirely.
Yeah. And how well did you know Dahlberg?
Yeah, I met Dahlberg when I was a student at UMKC with the University of Missouri at Kansas City. He was brought out there shortly after Because I Was Flesh was published by a professor named Ryan, who was an admirer. And Dahlberg taught two classes. I was a sophomore, I think. Technically, I was a sophomore. And I took both of his classes. And that was how I met him. I dropped out of school for a year after the semester I had Dahlberg. He only stayed for a half a semester the next year, and he decamped back to New York City because he found he found coming back to Kansas City wasn't the benison he hoped it would be.
And Arlene Dahlberg,
right.
That was his
wife at the time. And
yeah,
I met her, and then I got myself to Columbia University when I finally graduated in 68 with Dahlberg's help. He had taught there for a semester.
Yeah.
And again, the classroom was not his most comfortable setting, and he wasn't. He quit in a huff, and some people say he was fired, but his ghost would say that he was he quit. But nonetheless,
well, our friend Charlie Defante wrote the biography.
Yes, I always wanted Charlie to do, to reprint that and then write an addendum to it, an afterword that could fill in some of the things that he left out, when he wrote that originally.
Well, could you fill that in?
Well, I've written a few essays about Dahlberg over my
yes,
lifetime.
I see that. Yeah.
But and then luckily, the volume that has just come out, the Politics in the American Language one, ends with a cache of his Dahlberg's letters to me, and in between them, I write commentary on what was going on at the time. And to have those letters, to be able to publish them, I was granted the rights for them in a most gracious way. And it was a great joy for me to be able to do that, because Dahlberg should be read. But that's also the problem with a book of this sort. You really need readers who have read and understand literature and are curious and want to know more about it. It's in that way the general reader, alas, doesn't usually belly up to this sort of book.
Well, see, he was a very angry man, wasn't he, Dahlberg?
He could be.
Yeah.
And as he got older, all one's traits tend to be exaggerated, and so his anger would get even sharper. And though I tended only to, it would only come out at me over the phone.
Yeah.
In person, he tended to be always very gracious to me, but over the phone he would lambast me for all of my failings, which is, you know, quite a long list. So he wouldn't leave any of them out, believe me.
On what is the explanation for the great writers like yourself? How is it that you have taken this language, this English language, and made it a thing of beauty? It was banal and flat, but you get your hands on it and it soars. What is there a ethnic thing that reflects that?
One hopes in some ways, because I would like to have an excuse for it. But I'm three quarters Irish American and then one quarter Slovenian. So I don't know if the Slovenian side has or a portion.
Is that Mrs. Trump?
People don't believe me, but I go around saying that I'm related to Melania.
I love it.
Everybody rolls their eyes when I say that.
Because your essay is on Mr. Trump.
Unfortunately, as they unfold, because those are all in the rants section of the book, I realize they're all chronological, and I realize, oh God, this guy is actually going to win. So they get more dire as they,
Do you think so?
Yes. Trump is the culmination of a downward trend, you know, in the presidency. As I say in one of those essays, quoting a smart person I know, that, you know, the presidency really has turned into middle management.
Yeah.
And that's why Trump ends up being the apotheosis, because he's Babbitt without a vocabulary.
Yeah. Well, they want to dump the presidency. That is. It's quite straightforward there, Mr. O'Rourke.
I don't know. Yes, even I though am appalled, and I thought I was appalled so much through my life that I couldn't continue to be appalled, but I am.
It's quite amazing. My jaw still drops at the thought that he's president. I cannot believe that for a second. It is Trumpery. Trump
yes,
monkeys,
yes.
Trump rising.
Yeah, nomen est omen in that way. Trump. This next 6 months will be a madhouse, a continuing madhouse, given the circumstances and the election that is allegedly to come if Trump doesn't, you know, abolish it. But nonetheless, I still try to be hopeful.
Yeah.
You can't live in the Midwest without being hopeful.
Do you think he could call it off?
Well, he might attempt to, but I think better angels will, you know, prevail, one hopes at least.
Malachi, and we're going to have to move on here to get to our next guest.
Yes, I don't.
William O'Rourke, and the name of this book is Politics and the American Language. And you will not find better English language anywhere than in this magnificent collection of essays and lectures. I like it. But not dull. Filled with humor. And it's some parts of it are delightfully savage. I love it. And not stop that, Mr. O'Rourke. And we will talk again. And I want to thank Charlie DeFanti for putting me in touch with you again. Let's do it again.
Yes. Well, thanks so much. I've enjoyed it a great deal.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. All the best. Bye-bye. Now. Thank you. Malachy McCourt here, and that was Bill O'Rourke, William O'Rourke, Dr. O'Rourke, professor at Notre Dame, grand man, beautiful writer. It is scintillating language. Thank you, Bill. Okay, John, where are we?
Well, we're going to now play one of the best Queen songs ever and then go to Corey Kilgannon, and he's going to explain to our audience where and how we can break the law this week, this weekend in New York City, and which beaches to do it at. And we'll be talking about the policy of Rudy de Blasiano. So right now we're going to go out to Queens, where the Ramones, born and raised in Forest Hills, went to Forest Hills High, and we're singing about going on to Cross Bay Boulevard and hitchhiking out to Rockaway Beach. Yes, Rockaway Beach, where you can get the bus in Woodside at 61st Street and Roosevelt Avenue. And it might be hard for people to believe now, but going down Woodhaven Boulevard to Cross Bay, there used to be people hitchhiking to Rockaway Beach, as it said. But with us on the line is our co-host, Corey Kilgannon from the New York Times, who had a story yesterday about the beaches and where people might be breaking the law. But, Corey, where does it stand now? What can you do and what can't you do at Orchard, Rockaway, and Coney Island?
Good morning, John and Malachy. Thanks for having me on.
Hello, Corey.
The beaches update. It's John, you cannot swim at any of the city's beaches. The city has 14 miles of beach coastline, and including, like you said, Coney Island, Brighton Beach, Manhattan Beach, Rockaway Beach, Orchard Beach. You can't swim at any of them. The mayor has said the mayor fears large gatherings and close gatherings, like a crowded day at the beach in 90-degree weather. Obviously, we don't have anything like that this weekend, so it's almost a moot point right now. But, you know, if we are to get in the next, you know, number of weeks or any time this summer, really hot days with really, really dense crowds, that's what they're fearing with the whole coronavirus pandemic and the fear of transmission and no social distancing. So that's why the mayor has kept the beaches closed so far. And it's definitely been controversial because a lot of people want these beaches open and they fear that once we get a heat wave, you know, you can't keep people off the beach anyway. You can't even keep them out of the water. You have to have wall-to-wall enforcement to do that. And people are still going to go in. Then you're going to have more problems because you're not going to have lifeguards trained professionals to pull them out. So it's a kind of a complicated thing. But so that's why there's been a great deal of controversy. And then the story that I had, the most recent story I've had on this, it was that Long Island piped up saying that we don't want New Yorkers coming to our beaches. You know, I mean, of course, the outbreak is the most severe in New York City, over the whole country. And not that it hasn't been pretty severe on Long Island as well, but it's been worse in New York. And all these local beaches that are controlled by Long Beach, and not so much Jones Beach or Robert Moses, these state beaches, they're open to everyone. But all the other beaches, even going out to the Hamptons, are quickly scrambled to adopt residents-only policies to keep outsiders off the beach. And mainly it was mostly it was New Yorkers, because it was in reaction to the mayor, you know, closing New York's beaches. So they didn't want an overflow of beachgoers from New York to come out to all these smaller beaches and crowd them, you know.
What's the temperature of the water there, Corey?
It's in the 50s. It's cold. No, I mean, no one's going swimming unless, you know, they're really
unless they're like John McDonough.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but Corey, we talk about one of the ironies. We're allowed to go surfing at Rockaway Beach, but you can't go swimming. So I guess if you fall off the surfboard, you can't swim.
Right. In fairness, people have leashes to the surfboard, so I guess it's a little bit of a built-in, you know, flotation device or whatever. But that's always been, for years, ever since they started up, they began authorizing surfing at Rockaway, several different points. There's always been this rule throughout the winter, throughout the off season and the off hours. If there's no lifeguards on duty, you're not supposed to swim at all. But at Rockaway Beach, if you have a surfboard or a bodyboard, one of these foam boogie board type things, you can go in the surfing areas and go out anytime. And it's a little bit of a loophole or whatever. They figure surfers know what they're doing, maybe, and you accept the risk, and you have the surfboard attached to you. So that's maybe the logic behind it.
There are no lifeguards then. I mean, was saying the cops have to be the lifeguards.
I missed that last part. There are no lifeguards yet, though, right?
Yeah.
But, Corey, part of the problem is that the lifeguards at this moment haven't been re-registered, so he can't. They haven't been retrained or anything, so he couldn't even have had them this weekend. And he's talking about he's looking for federal money to pay the lifeguards. What happened to the city money that would have paid them?
The city is in a really severe budget crunch right now. Partly because of the crisis, the coronavirus crisis, as is the state, as is all of America, obviously, you know. But there's a real budget crunch right now. And the mayor closed the city pools this summer. He's not going to open the pools. And then that came a few weeks ago. And that was also controversial because a lot of the lower-income neighbors, especially, that's who a lot of the pools were built for, lower-income New Yorkers who had no other options, who couldn't jump in a car and go to Rockaway Beach or go to Long Island or go to Jones Beach and that kind of thing, or didn't have, you know, second homes and friends with second homes outside of the city. That's who the pools were built for. And so the pools were closed already this summer. They're not going to open. And the mayor cited budget reasons in closing them, as well as there was a bit of safety as well. But, you know, it's a little bit out in the pools. Pools are safe. So a lot of public health experts say pools are safe. But there's locker rooms and other, you know, it was part safety and part budget, from what I understand. So the pools are out this summer, and so are some other cooling options like playground sprinklers and stuff. So, the beaches are kind of one of the last cooling options. I mean, even the stores aren't open, libraries, malls. You can't pop in for air conditioning in a lot of places anymore, you know. So it kind of like that heightened the whole beach controversy that, you know, it was one of the last cooling options for a whole set of New Yorkers.
And Corey, what you happened 2 days ago, a 24-year-old kid drowned at Rockaway, and who went out to try and rescue him was a helicopter coming out of Floyd Bennett Field between Brooklyn and Queens and the Harbor Patrol. So here we are using people that are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary, and that we don't have the money for a lifeguard that wouldn't make a tenth of what the cops are making. So now they've been turned into the most expensive lifeguards in the world. With helicopters and boats are now the lifeguards at Rockaway. This is crazy.
Right. Exactly, John. I mean, how much does it cost to get all that kind of emergency services out there in a helicopter? And you know what? The first one drowning, a lawsuit from one drowning may cover everything that you saved on not hiring lifeguards. So, I mean, the city gets sued for these things, you know, routinely. So it's not to save money. You're not going to save money by skimping on lifeguards. I mean, probably, you know. And like you said, they weren't even ready to open on Memorial Day, even if the mayor, like, turned around on Friday and said we could, because they hadn't put the steps in place, like training the lifeguards, recertifying the lifeguards, hiring the seasonal workers that you have to have, you know, for enforcement, and maintenance and that kind of thing. And that stuff has to take place weeks and months in advance. The city starts training its lifeguards like in, you know, months in advance and recertifying them and recruiting more. They're always in need. So, I mean, these things all, it's a machine that has to start going like really way before Memorial Day starts. So, yeah, it's not something you can't flip a switch and turn the beaches on. You have to have already, and things are actually moving now. Lifeguards are being certified. So it looks like the beaches probably will open probably in June, by July 4th.
Well, Corey, we'd like to thank you for coming on, but you might not realize this, but WBAI is fundraising at the moment.
Is that right?
Yes. Can you get that into the Times? I mean, that's a breaking story.
Are you going to put the arm on me? I paid the office, you know.
Come on, that's breaking news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everyone's fundraising these days, my God.
I know. Well, I thanks know. For coming on, Malachi. We're going
yes,
to start winding up. Hopefully we raised a bit of money to justify us for coming on for next Sunday between 11 and 1 o'clock, and that you can get the mask or just make a donation. If you got anything left out of your stimulus check or anything that's left, I mean, everybody's down to their last dollar, so it is a tough time to pitch here at WBAI.
And, what's that number again, John?
Oh, here we go, 516-620-3602. If you call that number or go to WBAI.org and you'll see the pop-up ad, and you'll be able to get a mask with the OWL logo on it that you can wear proudly as you go to the co-op in Park Slope or wherever you're doing your shopping and show that you are a WBAI supporter and that you're wearing a mask. Malachi, do you wear a mask when you go out?
Oh, I do, yes. Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Do.
Yeah.
The Riverside Park?
Yeah, well,
is it,
you know, it's I have a slew of children and grandchildren, and it's we got to give the example for them. And it's, yeah, it's this macho man kind of rubbish that jerk in the White House is trying to pretend that he's immune to all kinds of diseases. And so, no, it's yes, I do. And Diana, when we do take walks down by the river, on the west side here, Soldiers and Sailors Monument there, and that's it. I mean, to pretend that you're nothing is going to happen is bloody stupid and very bad example for civic pride and disease. We've got to do something about that kind of nonsense. Yeah, I do. Do you, John?
Oh, yeah, but I look to our leader. He leads by example. I mean, he goes to a mask factory, doesn't wear one. He drinks hexachloride or whatever he's drinking. He eats hamburgers. He drinks Diet Pepsi. He goes golfing.
He injects it, doesn't he?
Yes, the healthy lifestyle that he is showing the nation on how to live. I look up to him in admiration. How does he do it? You know, like he is willing to die. He does not care. He wants to take me and you with him. That's the problem.
But he's such a little brain. I look down on him. You know, he's easy to do that. He's such a jerk. But where is he still married, by the way?
Father Trump? I guess he would be. Could be a deacon in the church.
Is he celibate? You know.
Listen. Let's end the show on a good note, will you, please, Malachi? I mean,
I would.
You're dragging everything into the gutter here. Oh my Lord!
I look down on him with reverence.
Well, let me give out the number one last time because I particularly wanted to go out with this song by Grandmaster Flash and The Message, and I want to send this out to Rudy De Blasiano, who's now turned into Mr. Law and Order. These guys were sending out a message back in the 80s, which is now coming true here now in 2020, about what's going on in the neighborhoods and how people are going to be heading to the beaches and everything. But if you call 516-620-3602, make any donation. But this is Grandmaster Flash sending a message to Mayor de Blasio.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Glass everywhere, people on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbingo, skip the life and dango. A zircon princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school, cause the teacher's a jerk, he must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer, I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Cause it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart, gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park, cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun, cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Hey, what's going on? This is Tito Nieves. I want you all to know that I listen to Con Sabor Latino, Montuneando con Marisol, alternating Sundays from 3 to 6 on WBAI 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. Listen live. Also on archive when I miss the show. You know what I love about this show? They inform me about everything. Who recorded, who sang, who composed. And you know what? Shows like this, they're not around anymore. That's why they've been in existence for 34 years. And you know what? I like it like that all the time.
Yeah, baby, I like it like that. I like it like that.
My name is Michael G. Haskins. WBAI is listener-supported, commercial-free, resistance radio, challenging norms and defying them. Let's break down what that means. It means that no clandestine corporate entity tells me how to do my show. You better believe that. It means that you, the listener, and the diverse WBAI community have a voice which reverberates across the tri-state area. You drive this station, so fuel us. Donate by visiting give2wbai.org or pledge right now from your smartphone by texting the letters WBAI to 41.